Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Vaccines Revealed. Today is a very special day. I have part 2 of my interview with Dr. Brian Hooker, and this interview is a mind blower when you look at what happened within the CDC and what he discovered. And if you saw part 1, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But it's an especially banner day because today it's here. The worldwide premiere of the movie Vaccine Syndrome. This movie must be seen, especially for anybody who cares about a military or is in the military or knows someone in the military, as well as first responders and other people that might be affected by the anthrax vaccine. Academy Award nominated filmmaker Scott Miller brings you this film with his wife, Melissa Miller, and I have to tell you, it is riveting. So enjoy today's episode and enjoy that movie. In 2014, you start to get having phone conversations with Dr. William Thompson of the CDC.
That is correct.
So give me the lead up to that. So how did those communications start? Because you had been in communication with him since the early 2000s, right?
That is correct.
So then what happened that got him to get on the phone with you?
As a part of the lawsuit, some documents surfaced that showed in the background Dr. William Thompson talking to CDC attorneys and actually attorneys who were fighting against my son in vaccine court. They were having these conversations behind the scenes as early as 2003 and 2004. To this day, I have no clue why Dr. Thompson would be talking about my son's particular vaccine injury case. And so I emailed him. I was furious. And I didn't care if the CDC said that I couldn't email CDC scientists. I looked up his email address and I started emailing and saying, how could you talk about my son's case behind his back? How could you use that in order to curtail my conversations with CDC scientists? How could you use that against me? And I think I wore him down because lo and behold, you know, I probably sent him three or four emails over the period of 3 or 4 months. And then in November of 2013, I receive a phone call. I look down, it's a 404 area code. It's the CDC. I'd received harassing calls from the CDC FOIA office before and anonymous phone calls from the CDC before. So I knew not to pick up the phone. I didn't want to deal with, you know, what could be at the other end of the line. But my curiosity got the best of me. And I did a reverse phone lookup, and lo and behold, it was Dr. William Thompson.
What happened when you got on the phone? What did he say?
We actually had a very, very polite conversation. One of the first things he asked was about my son and how my son was doing. And he was almost apologetic in tone. And this was somebody that was very, very different than the phone conversations that I had had with him back in 2003. 2004. He was a different man. He was a changed man. And I could tell that right away just by sort of the conciliatory tone. And it took about 2 phone conversations for him to say, you know, I know you're looking for information. I know you want to get into the central repository of vaccine safety data from the CDC. You're going about it in all the wrong ways. Here's what you do.
He wanted to help you.
He wanted to help me get data sets so somebody on the outside could independently analyze the data sets and see firsthand the flaws of the CDC.
So basically, he knew that there was something wrong with the way they were analyzing the data. And he knew that you were looking to try to get that data to analyze it independently of the CDC. But he also knew that you weren't going about it the right way and he was giving you guidance.
That is correct. And very, very quickly, he showed me how to submit a release for a public data set. And by law, the CDC, when they use federal funds to do a vaccine study, they have to come up with a public data set that the general public, primarily scientists on the outside, can have access to. And through his guidance, by January of 2014, I was swimming in data that I never knew existed.
Wow. So now, what motivated him? I mean, what did he see from the inside that made him want to help guide you from the outside?
He was motivated, and this came out, you know, December 2013, January 2014 timeframe. He knew that the CDC was doing bad statistics. He knew, and he was telling me that the CDC was actually lying about the relationship between vaccines and autism.
Wait, you use the word lying. Like, in other words, they knowingly were lying about the what data they were reporting relative to vaccines and autism.
Right. He knew that not only, you know, it started out a little more innocuous, and he was talking about the flaws in the methodology that the CDC was using. And then all of a sudden the conversation turned on a dime, and we were talking about fraud.
Wow. Do you think his conscience got to him? What do you think happened?
I think that this is something that had been brewing in his conscience since 2004, since when he saw just very, very specific, blatant fraud by his superiors at the CDC. And this is what he was reporting to me. And he wanted to make sure that somebody on the outside knew that this fraud had taken place.
Wow.
And the way that he wanted to go about doing that was to give me the data and to publish for me to publish the results in peer-reviewed scientific literature that showed, yes, there is a relationship. And we started out with the MMR vaccine, which I undertook in trepidation because I was not an expert at that time regarding the MMR, but we started out with a study that was fraudulent and flawed that he did in 2004, and he said, I want you to reanalyze that data set.
So just to get clear, because this is like very dramatic,
mm-hmm.
A research scientist at the CDC who's involved in the autism study in MMR, autism relationship, which was the one of the prime studies to debunk the relationship, because Andy Wakefield was completely discredited over his his minor assertion in the beginning that there might be a relationship here, and then everybody who says it's been disproven that there's a relationship between the two, the CDC study, etc. This was something that was a milestone study, and the guy who's on the research project contacts you and says, please get this information and reanalyze it.
That is correct. He was the lead statistician on this particular study. The first author of the study was Frank DiStefano, who was and still is the head of the Immunization Safety Office at CDC. One of the authors was Colleen Boyle, who is pretty much second in command at the CDC. She's the head of one of the major centers, the National Center for Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities. Another chief researcher, Marsha Lynn Jürgen Alsop, and then a postdoc who was just on loan from her university. The five of them colluded to cover up the results, several different alarming results that showed when you get the MMR on time, you are indeed more susceptible and more likely to get an autism diagnosis than when you delay it until after 3 years of age.
Wow. So just, strong words, colluded. That literally, and did Thompson talk about this collusion, that these people got together and eliminated data from the study to make it appear a certain way?
He would talk about it in rather vague terms, but he did use the word collude. And he used very, very strong language to say that the data that was published were completely fraudulent, that they had embarked upon the study, and he started to share documentation of how the study was supposed to be done in the first place. And then he guided me through the steps on how they deviated from that plan because they saw relationships between the MMR and autism, and they did not want to publish them.
The hair on the back of my neck is literally standing up right now. So here you are. And incidentally, you've had numerous conversations with him, four of which were recorded, so that you have documentary evidence to say these conversations are real.
That's
and,
correct.
And here, and it's validated that these things were said, and many more things that weren't recorded. But the point is, so here you are, the parent of an autistic child who has the course of your entire life altered because of the vaccines that your child was given, and you're on the phone now with a research scientist from the CDC who publishes with other co-authors a paper, and he's the lead guy on the statistics for the paper, and is basically saying that there was collusion between these authors to misrepresent the data, to try to show that there was not a relationship between the MMR vaccine and autism. And yet, the reality is, if you look at the data they had, there is. And so now, you know, you're saying, not only how are you affected, but because of the collusion, how many other families out there are sitting there with autistic kids because this information was never represented properly or truthfully?
The CDC knew about these relationships as early as November 7th, 2001, because I have the memo that says November 7th, 2001, and it delineates these relationships, and it shows a positive relationship with the MMR and autism among African Americans. It showed an association with what the CDC termed isolated autism. That's kids like my son that got autism but didn't have any other types of comorbidities like cerebral palsy or mental retardation that just basically regressed into autism. There were strong, statistically significant relationships. CDC knew about it November 7th, 2001. And you look at how many kids have been born since then, how many kids have been diagnosed with autism since then, and how many kids actually got the MMR on time, and how many lives, how many families could have been saved.
In your wildest dreams, do you think you would ever gotten to the point where you're on the phone surreptitiously with a CDC scientist who's on the autism study with MMR, calling you and talking to you and basically saying, reanalyze this data, please? You know, and saying there's collusion between the scientists, that there's fraud in the way that they're representing the data, that you are a family that's affected. You know, in 2001, you already reviewed that they were hiding things. I think you said November 7, 2001, that there was, you know, email traffic that you got through FOIA. All these years, all these kids getting vaccinated. Now, one of the things that I happen to know, because I've you know, had conversations with you personally, and I've watched Vax, et cetera, but one of the things is that what they showed in this study was that if you delayed the use of the MMR vaccine, the risk of autism goes down precipitously, correct?
That is correct.
I mean, it was an obvious thing, and they didn't even want to report that. I mean, they could have just said, hey, we have new data, delay this, but it would then admit that the people who followed the schedule in the beginning have autistic kids as a result of their recommendations, so they couldn't admit it.
The CDC would never go on record and admit that, so they chose to cover it up. And what they did was they sat on that information for a year and a half. They would meet weekly. These five scientists would meet on a weekly basis. They would have Thompson rerun the data, reanalyze the data. He could not make the effect go away. Okay.
Even trying to make the effect go away by reanalyzing the data or using different statistical manipulation, he still couldn't make it go away.
He couldn't make that information go away. And so what they decided to do, specifically with the African Americans, was they said, oh, we will only rely on race data for those individuals that have a valid state of Georgia birth certificate. So it took that population and it reduced it by almost a half. It became half as large. And everybody that knows statistics knows that if you have a smaller sampling size, you lose statistical power. You lose the relationship. And so they use that. There was no good reason to say that, oh, we got race data from birth certificates, because the race data was in all the school records for all the children that were participating in that study. The only reason they did that was to reduce the statistical power. The scientists that were Thompson's superior said, run it this way and see what happens. And lo and behold, when they eliminated those kids, the relationship went away.
And there could be no logic, right? I mean, they're saying, oh, I know one way we can reduce the sample size is if they don't have a Georgia birth certificate, as if that changes them genetically somehow, as if that changes, you know, their species. Why should it matter what birth certificate they have to the study and the population in the study? Is there any rationale?
There is no effective rationale for that. There is no scientific reason for that. It is clear cut that what they wanted to do was reduce the statistical power so they could make that relationship go away. And when they were able to do that, Dr. Colleen Boyle and Dr. Frank DiStefano called a meeting, said, bring in all of your information regarding the effect with African Americans, and we're going to throw it away. We are going to destroy that information. I don't have the exact day that they met, but it was between September and October 2002. So they've been sitting on that data for about 8 months, and they decided that they would trash can that data. And if you look at the information that the CDC had after the trash can meeting, those results were nowhere to be found. They buried them.
Whoa. Dr. Thompson, who was on the study, affirms that this shredding party, if you will, happened.
Dr. Thompson was there at the shredding party. Interestingly enough, the superior who ordered the shredding party, Dr. Colleen Boyle, decided not to attend that particular meeting. So her fingerprints were all over the meeting, but she would not do the dirty work.
So literally, these scientists on this project got together, ordered by their superiors to get together, and said, we want to eliminate this data, and we are literally going to shred dispose of this data, so we have no record of it.
That is correct. That is a violation of the Federal Records Act of 1950, as amended in the 1970s. They were taking federal records. That information could be considered federal information, and they, instead of handling it properly and archiving the federal records, they destroyed it.
And when you look at the study, it obviously isn't there, and then they could say it's nowhere to be found, except they didn't count on the fact that Dr. Thompson kept a copy.
Dr. Thompson knew that he would be legally liable for destroying that information, so he retained his own copy of not only the hard copies, but he also had the electronic copies on the hard drive of his computer. And that's ultimately what he shared with me.
Wow. And now, so this is kind of a pretty damning situation for these CDC officials, because if I understand correctly, Congressman Posey in Florida has a copy of this in a safe, and they're trying to call Dr. Thompson as a whistleblower to appear in front of Congress and talk about this fraud and deception.
That is correct. Dr. Thompson, during the conversations that we had, I wanted Dr. Thompson to do two things. I wanted him to hire a whistleblower attorney and declare federal whistleblower status so he had the protections that were afforded by that particular status. He did that. He ended up getting one of the top whistleblower attorneys in the country in order to represent himself. The second thing that I wanted him to do was to reach out to Congressman Bill Posey. Bill Posey has been sympathetic regarding the autism vaccine issue since he took office, I believe, in 2012. And so when he took over, he was a friend of our community, and Dr. Thompson then went to him with large bins of information, physically took bins of information to Bill Posey's office, set those down, and shared all of the records that he had shared with me up to that point in time. And we're talking about tens of thousands of pages of documents.
Wow.
That showed CDC fraud, that showed up CDC inclination, that when they found a positive relationship that showed a tie between a vaccine or vaccine component and autism, that they would either bury the relationship entirely by throwing it in a trash can, or they would downplay the relationship and make sure that the final publication had verbiage that said, there's nothing to worry about, there's nothing to worry about the MMR, there's nothing to worry about thimerosal. So indeed, instead of changing the vaccine schedule to err on the side of safety, they changed the vaccine schedule to err on the side of more profits for the pharmaceutical companies and themselves acting as a vaccine company.
Wow. I mean, I'm basically speechless. So I can't imagine what's going on inside of your mind, because you're wearing all these hats. First of all, you're like the investigator who's discovering all this. You have a child that's vaccine damaged. You're a research scientist yourself, so you understand these things on a deep level as far as how this could be pulled off and mm-hmm. how they could pull the wool over one's eyes. And you're also cognizant of the fact that there are children damaged every single day right now because this information is not public. What do you feel inside?
I was completely conflicted. When my head hit the pillow at night, I would think about the lives that could be saved if this information was made public. And I would try to weigh that against continuing the relationship with Thompson and other documents that he could funnel from the CDC to me in order to, you know, bring the CDC down, which is, you know, I think is still a worthy goal and is something that needs to happen. We need complete reform in the CDC. Thompson himself told me that vaccine safety didn't belong in the CDC or in the Department of Health and Human Services as a whole. It needed to be moved out. It needed to be an independent agency. So I weighed that affecting change in the CDC and being able to reform this so somebody somewhere could know that the CDC came clean versus how many people were diagnosed with autism today? How many people are going to be diagnosed with autism tomorrow? How many people are going to comply blindly with a bloated vaccination schedule that's a recipe for disaster? It's a grand medical experiment. It hasn't been researched properly, and the research that has been done shows grave danger for people who follow that vaccination schedule. And so I was very, very conflicted. I also worked early on. It was never really palatable for me to record phone conversations with Dr. Thompson, especially without his knowledge. I did not want him to know that I was recording these conversations because I wanted him to speak honestly. I wanted him to repeat some of the things that he had said in conversations with me that I had not recorded. And I also had two attorneys working with me to make sure that what I was doing was not illegal. Now, I live in California. California is a two-party consent state, so it is illegal to record somebody without their knowledge. I'm next door to Oregon, so two of the calls that were recorded were made in Oregon. Another one of the calls was made in Virginia, which is a one-party state, and then the final call was made in Illinois, which is a one-party state. And so I needed to protect my family. I wanted some type of proof that this happened.
Yeah.
I wanted some type of evidence, some type of timestamp that said, we had these conversations. This is definitively Bill Thompson revealing this information to me. This isn't me with a pile of information. This is with me with a government employee who's making admissions of collusion to commit fraud by senior CDC officials. And that's why I recorded those calls.
Yeah, and not only is it, you know, a government employee, it's not like some admin person who said, I think something's going on in the other room over here. It's the guy in the center of it, basically. He's one of the guys on the study. But here's the thing out in the world, when you mentioned autism and vaccines, but, oh, that's been disproven. Don't you? Yeah, like they look at you like you're some kind of an idiot. Oh, that's been refuted. That's been scientifically proven. So now people are lining up saying, I don't have to worry about this. That's all been disproven because of what's been put out. And they're vaccinating these kids. And literally, even if you decided that you wanted to vaccinate, which is probably based on everything that we know, not a good idea. Mm-hmm. But even if you decided, you know what, I want to do it. Literally, if they just reported the data and they delayed the administration of the MMR vaccine, that would reduce the risk you're taking by a lot, according to the data that study originally gathered.
That is correct. If you look at the original data, and I did the analysis in January and February of 2014, I saw that the risk for African-American males that received the MMR on time was three times greater than African-American males that got the MMR after 3 years. Three times greater? There was three times as much autism.
It's not like a 15 or 20%. Three times more likely to get autism if they vaccinated before 36 months as compared to after?
That is correct. That is correct.
In the African-American population?
That is correct.
Wow. And so now you look at saying, you know, they and that's what they said, we're going to bury that data. We're going to, you know, we're going to dispose of that data, and we're not reporting it at all. But it's in the original.
It's in the original study.
Yeah.
It's in their data, and it was I attempted to publish that information. I had a publication accepted in the journal Translational Neurodegeneration. It's a journal that I had published in before. We went through peer review. The article appeared in print at the end of July of 2014. And lo and behold, when the entire whistleblower story broke, and this broke in around August 21st, 2014, it took about 4 days, and the journal took my paper down on the, from the website, so it was no longer. At first, they said...
Did they fully retract it, or they just don't put it up?
They published a statement. They took the paper completely down. They published a statement saying that this the results of this paper would have a negative effect on public health.
The truth has a negative effect on public health, and we can't let that happen?
So we can't let that happen. About 24 hours later, they instead changed that and said that I had undisclosed conflict of interest, which was rubbish. It was completely fabricated.
What's your conflict of interest? What monetary gain do you get by publishing this data? But what I'm hearing is they never said that your statistical analysis was wrong.
No.
They basically were trying to find other ways, because they didn't say, oh, the science, it went through peer review. They said this is properly done.
Right.
So they're looking for a different angle to try to discredit the paper.
Ultimately, the paper was put, you know, I like to call it timeout, because, you know, kids get timeout and they have to go sit in the timeout chair. So my paper was put in timeout for about 6 weeks. Uh-huh. And during those 6 weeks, I argued back and forth with the journal regarding why it should be published, why my science was sound. They sent me back a paragraph description from one of their editors saying that my science was unacceptable. I rebutted that paragraph. They never sent a response to that. And then on October 3rd, they completely retracted the paper.
And of course, no coincidence that when the whistleblower story comes out, that within the temporal profile of that, that's when your paper gets retracted.
That's when my paper gets retracted.
That's just pure coincidence, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Because,
yeah,
because your science was fine when they published it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. My God. So, you know, how do you control the outrage, and how do you not let it eat you up inside? I mean, it's really almost unthinkable.
It is very, very difficult to response to be able to let things like that go. And it was difficult. It was a difficult step for me to forgive Thompson. I mean, in the first place. I mean, I felt like, you know, he alone, by sitting on this as long as he did, is culpable for a large amount of damage to society. There are a lot of families that have been shattered. But I really did have to let it go. And my wife, Marcia, was instrumental in that. You know what? You need to let this whole thing go. You need to. And getting my paper retracted, I never got detention in school. I've never had anything big like that happen. I've never had a paper retracted. And so having that was a real psychological blow to me. And I just had to let it go. But the silver lining was I was contacted by several scientists that said, look, we know what you've gone through. We want you to republish that data because that data needs to be on the public domain. And they've provided an opportunity. This whole paper will be republished, actually in a much more expanded form, laying out the logic of why my results are correct and why the paper should have never been retracted in the first place. And it's coming out in a book in fall of 2017 that's published by Elsevier Scientific, a very reputable publishing house.
I know who they are, sure.
And I've had my day in the public domain. I will have my day in the public domain. And I count myself worthy of some of the scars that were endured by great people like Andy Wakefield.
Okay. Sir, I'm here for the sake of my client, Corporal Gerald Schwartz, who would like to be heard, sir, and I believe he deserves to be heard.
You heard our ruling on this. The ruling is final.
But, ladies and gentlemen, this is a very young man, 20 years of age. Sir, this young man signed up at 17.
Order is in order. If that's not consistent, then we lose.
Now, sir, it wouldn't hurt your military code if you just listened to his reason for not observing the direct order. President Clinton passed some legislation and an executive...
I read that, Counselor.
Put it away.
Yes, sir. But, sir, armed with what you can get on the Internet today, would you have taken the vaccine, sir?
Oh, fuck the Internet.
Listen, I'm going to cut this short. We will hear him. You understand that?
Yes, I do.
I don't think you do.
General!
I don't think you do!
General, knock it off!
We will hear him. You understand that? But we will not comment on the record. Do we understand each other?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Counselor. Conversation's over.
Yes, sir. They are going to let you speak. And you've got the speech. Have you read it?
Yes, sir. But my mom doesn't want me to say anything. She wants it all to go away, sir.
What do you want?
I want to serve my country. Be a Marine. Sir.
I believe you'll be able to fight for your country again.
They're going to let me speak on the record, sir.
Yes, they are. But I won't be in there with you. I think they know that the vaccine has problems. Now, take your time. Don't worry how it all sounds. We want it all recorded for the transcript.
Will not let us down. Sir.
The first trial for refusing the direct order to take the anthrax vaccine took place 3 months before President Clinton signed Executive Order 13139. It lasted only 3 hours because the defense attorney, Mark Zaid, was not allowed to present any witnesses or evidence. What follows is a reenactment of the sworn statement of Lance Corporal Gerald Schwartz given at his sentencing hearing.
Corporal Schwartz, reporting to the senior member of the board, sir.
Corporal Schwartz, even though you've been found guilty of disobeying a lawful order, I have personally decided to allow you to speak to your superiors. You understand that?
Yes, sir. Your Honor, having been found guilty of the offense of disobeying a lawful order to take the anthrax vaccine, I stand before you willing to accept my punishment. Before I do, I believe that it's important for you to understand who I am and why I chose to refuse what I still consider an unlawful order. I'm now 20 years old, and I grew up in Henderson, Kentucky. I chose to join the Marine Corps because it was the hardest challenge that I knew of. I enlisted when I was 18 years old for a 5-year tour. I never thought that I would not complete my full tour. I have never had any disciplinary problems while a Marine. And I've never been in any kind of trouble before that. I was a good Marine. I stand here today representing every member of the service who wishes to challenge the anthrax vaccine program. And if my actions may lead to a change in what has been deemed a decision of policy, then my personal sacrifice will have been worth it. I want to thank God and my family and my friends for the support that they have provided me throughout this whole ordeal. Thank you.
Corporal Schwartz,
you're dismissed.
Aye, aye, sir.
The sentence was 30 days in the brig and a bad conduct discharge. Today, Lance Corporal Jared Schwartz is a convicted felon.
The film you're about to see is a true story. Why is this executive order, given by a civilian president who never served a day in his life in the military, still in force today? They say that 35,000 military members are receiving the vaccine a month. They say that no one is ill from the vaccine. They say that the vaccine is safe, effective, and FDA approved. They say all 3.2 million members are to receive the vaccine. I am proud to be an American. I believe this vaccine is unsafe. I believe that we should have the right to control our own body.
In the only public study ever done, it was found that 30% of all vaccinated members of the military have reported some chronic illnesses they claim are due to the anthrax vaccine. These symptoms have become known as Gulf War Syndrome.
I was alone, and I eventually became so sick. I was having problems with memory lapses, and I couldn't remember things. I couldn't remember hours. I couldn't remember what I did for an entire day. I couldn't drive at times. I wasn't eating. I was down to chicken broth and saltines if I was lucky. The immunology clinic at Walter Reed wrote it down that I had problems with the anthrax vaccination. You're a broke soldier. You're sick. We don't like broke things, so we're going to throw that out. and replace it with a new number.
There are many desperately anxious to tell their stories so that their comrades may be spared. If we ignore this, perhaps we are all guilty of terrorism.
It baffles me that people, the ill people, are not being heard. Again, they go through the old saying that was used was, these people are malingerers, liars, and whiners. They're air crew members. They're flyers. They've got egos a mile long, and they're just whining. They don't want to fly. And I find that offensive.
My name is Earl Stauffer. I'm a tech sergeant, E6, 326 Airlift Squadron at Dover Air Force Base. I'm a loadmaster on the C-5s. Received the anthrax vaccine in January, February. That changed it all. A couple of months after my third anthrax vaccine, I was sitting on my sofa one Sunday morning, enjoying life, windows open. I live on a farm, sunshine, blue skies. Next thing I know, I'm heading for the floor. Me, coffee cup, everything. About 30 to 45 minutes later, I was able to crawl to the bottom of the stairs of my farmhouse and get my wife's attention to tell her something was wrong. Well, she came downstairs. That lasted for about 6 hours that day. But the bad thing of it is it started happening every other day. We're going on 40-some-odd months now of nonstop, 24-7, screaming in my ears.
My name's Rhonda Lynn Wilson, and I'm 26 years old. I was a CW2 in the Army. Our PT scores are the highest is 300, and I was maxing out on my physical training. I was the only female pilot in the cavalry where I was stationed, so I kind of stood out a bit. I took three. You eat something and within 10 minutes I'm in the fetal position crying. And crying in pain because of the cramping and the nausea and the vomiting. And that goes anywhere from a half hour up to a couple hours. I guess I was naive, thinking that they would never harm soldiers. Because I was a soldier first, and then an officer, and then an aviator. And even though aviation was my love, the military was my life. No, nobody can help me, but maybe I can help someone.
Mandatory vaccination of the 2.5 million active military members, members of the Coast Guard, and some civilian employees began in March 1998 with the very public inoculation of Secretary of Defense William
it's
Cohen.
It's important when we talk about weapons of mass destruction that we translate that into something that the American people and hopefully the world community can understand. For example, when we talk about anthrax. Anthrax, if you took a 5-pound bag of sugar, except call this anthrax. This amount of anthrax could be spread, if it's spread over a city, let's say the size of Washington, it would destroy at least half the population of that city. One of the things we found with anthrax is that one breath, and you were likely to face death within 5 days. One small particle of anthrax would produce death within 5 days.
There were to be 6 shots over an 18-month period with an annual booster shot, but within weeks, Soldiers were reporting adverse reactions.
First anthrax shot. Raise your hands.
And refusing additional doses. The vaccine was not FDA approved, and neither was the protocol for giving it. The FDA cited the lab producing the vaccine for almost 100 violations, including substandard record keeping. Soldiers who refused the shot were subject to disciplinary actions. It was concocted with up to 100 times the antigen levels of the original vaccine. It had been combined with irritants such as the adjuvant squalene and other pathogens because the vaccine did not result in a satisfactory immune response to anthrax. Israel gave $26 million to USAMRIID to oversee a joint anthrax program codenamed Omer II. USAMRIID's Dr. Ivins, who ran the project, knew in 1998, the same year that the U.S. program started, that the anthrax vaccine had seriously injured 1,500 Israeli Defense Force soldiers. February 2014, 96 Israeli soldiers were awarded $6 million for damage caused in 1998 by the American anthrax vaccine.
Friendly fire. Friendly fire through a needle.
People suffering from Gulf War syndrome have reported the following symptoms: blackouts, chronic fatigue, cysts on the scalp, lesions on the brain, heart, and lungs, the inability to concentrate, respiratory problems, skin rashes, vertigo, autoimmune disorders, chronic headaches, thyroid cancer, paralysis of the stomach, allergies, liver damage, Tourette's syndrome, and more.
The National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program was enacted by Congress so that manufacturers would be held harmless from lawsuits for injuries due to rapidly developed, possibly unsafe vaccines. If you are injured by a vaccine, you must sue the U.S. government, not the manufacturer or their profits. The Vaccine Injury Compensation Program is not available to military personnel.
For every one individual that comes forward, there are three individuals that will not.
Lieutenant Rich Rove is a male nurse with 17 years in the service. He has medically treated many members of the service who are suffering from various symptoms of the Gulf War syndrome. On 21 July 1999, Lieutenant Rove went to Washington, and because of his rank, he was allowed to speak to a congressional committee on behalf of his fellow members of the military. By doing so, he risked his standing in the military community.
After I testified, like I said, my career began to take a steady nosedive. I was viewed with suspicion, and in some circles ostracized. There was a time when I was pulled out of the clinic to work on a flu shot line as a skilled, qualified lieutenant. I had no problem performing an extra duty if it was for the good of the mission, but I was taken from my clinic duties, removed from my clinic duties, and was to administer flu shot for 20-some-odd days. At that point, I said, oh boy, this is getting rough here. But I went ahead, saluted smartly, and pressed on. And then I found out that they had brought out the anthrax vaccine, and even though I did not have to give it, the vaccine was still going to be administered on the flu shot line. I had some concerns, and I said, if we're administering this vaccine, which is currently controversial, and you always hear that, the controversial anthrax vaccine. We're giving this controversial vaccine. We should be trying to collect good data on people that are receiving it. So we were giving multiple vaccinations, including those who were due for their anthrax vaccine, on a flu shot line. Now, how in the world can you determine if a vaccine had caused an illness or an adverse reaction when you're giving it concomitantly with other vaccines?
But we were also ordered, do not record lots, batches, doses, who got them, what their reactions were, when they got them, or how many they got. Direct orders.
These people suffer from Gulf War syndrome. The military tells us it's an emotional ailment. We do know that the vaccine given them was not approved by the FDA. We do know that refusal to take the shots has resulted in dishonorable discharge, fines, and prison. We do know that mandatory anthrax vaccinations are to continue.
One out of three returning veterans, including those that had not seen combat, require treatment for depression and post-traumatic stress syndrome. For more than 3,000 years, rulers have used germ warfare to gain an unseen advantage over their opponents. But unseen is also uncontrollable. There can be unintended consequences. One of the world's most notorious acts killed off half the population in Europe in the 14th century. Bubonic plague victims were thrown over city walls. Fleas from the corpses infected rats, and it spread from there. Black Death claimed 25 million lives. In 1876, German physician Robert Koch isolated anthrax spores from diseased animals. He proved that a disease is caused by a particular organism. Imperial Germany used anthrax as a weapon in World War I, 1914 to 1918. This prompted world leaders to sign the Geneva Protocol in 1925 to ban the use of chemical and bacteriological methods of warfare. It did not prevent countries from researching, developing, and producing these weapons. During and after World War II, the United States, Great Britain, and other countries developed anthrax weapons.
They are incidents of empire and power, military power. And human experimentation comes out of that inevitably, and always will, because people don't matter.
Attorney Len Schroeder won thousands of Agent Orange cases against the government for Vietnam vets. During World War II, the Allied forces and the Axis powers openly developed nuclear weapons, but their biological and chemical weapons programs were conducted in secret.
In the summer of 1944, British Prime Minister Winston Churchill approved an order of 500,000 four-pound anthrax bombs to be built in the United States. The war ended before the order was completed. But the extent of the program conducted by the Japanese was staggering. Unit 731, in existence since 1933, was staffed with over 3,000 scientists and technicians, secretly experimenting on Manchurian prisoners.
Dr. Shiro Hishi, head of Unit 731, sunk so low as to hand out candy to starving Chinese children. Chocolates that were laced with anthrax, a highly lethal disease that attacks the respiratory and digestive systems.
In exchange for immunity from prosecution for war crimes, the directors of Unit 731 were interrogated by the Americans. They revealed that hundreds of thousands had died. 11 Chinese cities were attacked with biological agents, including anthrax cultures sprayed from aircraft. 1,700 Japanese soldiers died in one attack alone. One disadvantage of bioweapons should have been very clear: the difficulty of protecting one's own troops and citizens.
The lead scientist of the notorious Unit 731, Dr. Ishii, was enlisted by Henry Stimson to conduct biohazard experiments at Fort Detrick. The program expanded to over 100 locations in America.
Volunteers are important to the testing picture. For many years, information has been needed on the effect of a biological warfare attack on man. The volunteers were a picked group. They had received psychiatric interviews to determine their maturity and reliability, as well as mental outlook. Any history of a chronic disease, any allergic reaction or nervous disorder was a cause for rejection. Volunteers were given the opportunity to drop out at any time. The volunteers had been positioned in cubicles on the outside of the test sphere, a hollow steel ball 40 feet in diameter, in which a cloud of biological warfare agent can be generated. Through a series of controllable valves and a face mask, it was possible to expose a person in each cubicle to a measured volume of biological aerosol from the sphere. Research has led to many scientific findings beneficial to mankind, such as a perfected vaccine for controlling industrial anthrax, a usually fatal disease of cattle and sheep.
In 1953, researchers turned their attention to vaccines, anti-sera, and therapeutic agents. They must have realized too late that it is much easier to create an antibiotic-resistant strain of a pathogen than it is to create immunity to it.
I know how emotionally
intellectually and in every other way, the horror of human experimentation. Unfortunately, human experimentation continues to this day, and is done largely by governments, including the United States, right now.
One of the biological agents Iraq is suspected of hiding is the deadly anthrax virus. The United States military announced Monday it will vaccinate nearly all of its active and reserve troops against anthrax to prepare for the possibility of germ warfare.
President Clinton's Executive Order 13139 created a mandatory anthrax vaccination immunization program. This direct order made it illegal for military members to refuse experimental vaccines or drugs.
I could foresee where an executive order, we need to go do this because of this, and we need to do it now. We don't have time for debate. I can see that possibility.
The Iraqi regime has plotted to develop anthrax. This is a regime that has already used poison gas to murder thousands of its own citizens, leaving the bodies of mothers huddled over their dead children.
And the biggest regret of all the presidency has to have been the intelligence failure in Iraq. It wasn't just people in my administration.
His biggest regret is that he had incorrect information related to Saddam Hussein and weapons of mass destruction.
It seems that successive presidents failed to scrutinize executive orders. President Bush did not repeal Executive Order 13139 before he left office in January 2009.
I know that we can.
I know that way.
And those who tell us that we can't, we will respond with that timeless creed that sums up the spirit of a people. Yes, we can. Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
President Obama was reelected, but military voting had dropped 70% in the 2012 election.
Thank you.
I have seen firsthand that being president doesn't change who you are.
The truth gets buried under an avalanche of money.
This is the air loss of Suffolk.
We will serve our veterans as well as they've served us.
I think these questions need to be asked.
I've got no air.
And more importantly, they need to be answered.
Around me private parts.
We have tried to do this to the best of our ability.
I haven't been given a reason why. It's like one.
You know, I'd rather have caught a bullet from an AK-47 than gotten injected with this stuff.
Despite congressional findings, independent research, and veteran association warnings that span 20 years, President Obama is expanding the anthrax vaccine program. Over 1 million soldiers in the United States suffer from Gulf War illness due to the anthrax vaccine. The first Gulf War was the most toxic war in history. Gulf War syndrome were caused by six main toxicities: oil and gas fumes from the oil field fires, sarin gas released when Allied troops blew up Iraqi munition sites, fine radioactive particle dust from spent uranium weapons, pesticides and repellents used against insects and flies, experimental drugs intended to protect against nerve agents, and the anthrax vaccine. Military members who received the anthrax vaccine but did not deploy also developed Gulf War illness.
They worry that the real enemy is the vaccine itself.
It's your very first anthrax shot. Raise your hand. We are part of the American family. We believe that in a country where every race and faith and point of view can be found, we are still bound together as one people.
I've seen it in people who become heroes at a moment's notice.
That the dreams of a little girl in Tucson are not so different than those of our own children. That they all deserve the chance to be fulfilled.
Military women, after receiving the vaccine, are being advised not to become pregnant during the 18-month period of 6 anthrax shots. This is due to reported pregnancy problems and birth defects.
Must be something wrong when you've got veterans coming forward and don't want to believe they're ill, who are ill, and seeing the effects of the inoculations from Gulf One.
My name is Malcolm Hooper. I'm the Emeritus Professor of Medicinal Chemistry at the University of Sunderland and the Chief Advisor to the Gulf War veterans in the UK. And I assumed that they would just want to talk to me occasionally about things like some things in their medical records. This turned out not to be the case. They put me on these government committees as their representative, and I've been very active ever since 1997 with the affairs of the Gulf War veterans. When I talk to Gulf War veterans and to Gulf War veterans' wives and partners, they are almost unanimous in saying that this is part of the difficulties of their relationships, that when they make love, they enter a world of pain, and pain in the most intimate parts of their bodies. And It's just another fact that needs to be looked at carefully, and it hasn't been looked at carefully. It's been dismissed because someone's looked at some records and found little mention of them. It's not the sort of thing that Gulf War veterans, and particularly men, go around chanting out and telling everybody. And the National Gulf Veterans and Families Association, the families bit, is where the ladies have talked to each other, and they've talked about these things as being part of the difficulties that they have in their relationships. Burning semen syndrome is painful, it's destructive, and it's frightening because we don't know what it means and what it adds up to. And if you have a baby born as a result of a partner who has burning semen syndrome, what's the impact of that? We don't know. But we do know we're seeing babies who are seriously damaged.
The name is Sammy R. Young, Y-U-N-G. I'm a retired Air Force Reserve Medical Service Corps colonel, and I'm a retired former investigator and regulatory official with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, where I served for 29 years and 2 months. Well, knowing what I know about the approval of the product, I would not take it. I would not accept the vaccine because it has never been approved for the use for which the Department of Defense intended to use it, namely inhalation anthrax. This is not just a military situation. This bodes evil for the American public.
The regime for giving the vaccines was not adhered to. A lot of people received a lot of vaccines in a very short period of time. And I think this is of grave concern because this is not recommended practice for the administration of vaccines.
This anthrax vaccine, it cannot go on.
My first anthrax vaccine caused me to feel ill and have flu-like symptoms. I felt nauseated. And then 2 weeks later, we needed to have our second anthrax vaccine. And I stood in line to have that. And they asked if anyone felt sick from their first anthrax vaccine. So I stood in the line for people who felt like they were sick from their first one. I would have been court-martialed if I had not stood in line. One of the symptoms has caused me to have a form of Tourette syndrome. It causes fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome,
sensitivity to anthrax vaccine is what they put. I have chronic pain. I was on a drug called, one of the drugs right away I was put on was Neurontin. Vicodin. At one time for pain, I was taking 12 Vicodin a day. I'm down to about 8 Vicodin a day, between 6 and 8 Vicodin a day. I had 14 years and I believe 7 months of service. I can't work. There was no way that I could put in another, what is it, 6 years. I have a bad attitude about how they expected a fifth grader to take care of her mother. I don't know if it was necessarily one person or a lot of people or the decision makers who came up with the mandatory reasoning for having us take the anthrax vaccine.
Three and a half weeks after her sixth shot, she pretty much out of the blue wakes up one morning and she's on her period and it's pouring right out of her, just pouring. And she goes to the clinic there on the base and they're assuming, oh, she might have some virus or something. And they have her sitting in the waiting area while, you know how ERs are, you take care of the priority cases first. And so she was sitting out there. At the time, they didn't, without knowing it, they didn't know it. She was dying. Kinsey is convinced to this day that her mom passed away because she cut her finger. Because that's what she remembers. She remembers being home with her mom and that happening.
A lot of other people got the anthrax, but I just want to know why it affected him that way. He was 19. And I was 18. And, well, we were hanging Christmas lights. And he was wearing my favorite sweatshirt. And the roof, it's like a brown red, and he'd got it all dirty. And I told him that he had ruined my sweatshirt. And he was joking around how he'll make it up to me. And then we were just talking, and he went quiet, just like a daze, and we were fooling around on the roof, to be honest, but there's really no way to tell you the story without throwing that in there. Anyway, and then he got really quiet, and I looked at him, and he tried to say something to me. He was kind of sitting on his knees, and he just had this glossy look, and he was just looking right past me, pretty much through me. And I told him to quit messing around, you know, and he just went limp. And I was like, quit messing around, it's not funny, you know, don't play like that. Because he'd always joke around, because I teach CPR, and he's like, always pretending in the pool that he's drowning, so I'd have to save him, and so I thought he was playing, and he wasn't. And so he was falling back, and I caught him, and I laid him down, and I didn't recognize that he needed CPR. At the time, And I just started pounding on the roof.
An autopsy revealed Sergeant Dan Cole died from a major heart attack due to massive lesions on his main arteries. Sergeant Rodriguez received the anthrax vaccine prior to deploying to Iraq in 2007. Vaccines stress the immune system and weaken its ability to fight existing conditions of disease.
The days when depression and PTSD were stigmatized, those days must end. That's why I made the decision to start sending condolence letters to the families of service members who take their lives while deployed in a combat zone.
The families of service members who commit suicide while deployed are not entitled to funeral expenses or benefits.
There was three anthrax, two pertussis, and I asked what the biological injections were, and they said that there was anthrax and pertussis ready mixed. So in that case, I then had a total of five anthrax injections. I've got reduced perfusion to the cortex of the brain, more marked in the cerebral parietal lobes and the brain stem. I have recall problems, memory loss, intermittent dyslexia, difficulty in reading and retaining the information, poor coordination. I've got loss of peripheral vision. I suffer from double vision. I've got tinnitus, loss of hearing on low tones, slow speech, stuttering, poor coordination, difficulty in swallowing, difficulty in breathing, high blood pressure, liver problems, unusual liver enzyme profiles. I suffer from abdominal cramps and pains, irritable bowel syndrome, PR bleeding, which can last anything up to 3 or 4 weeks at a time. Frequency of micturition, passing water, severe cramps, pains in the muscles, in the joints, fatigue, chronic fatigue. You just curl up in a ball and you just can't do anything. Yeah, my name's Ray Bristow, former warrant officer with the medical corps, with the 3-2-field hospital, also previously served with airborne units and special forces.
All vaccines injure the immune system. The point is for your immune system to fight back and go after the antigen with an antibody. Each immune system is unique and responds differently to the same vaccine. According to the latest theory of herd immunity, 95% of the community must be vaccinated to prevent a disease. Think of your immune system as a bull. Now, imagine that the matador is a vaccine. You'll see that there are three possible outcomes to vaccination. The first is nothing, no immunity, and no real harm either. The second possible outcome is that the immune system creates antibodies that go after the antigen. It wins the fight, and there is a lifetime of immunity. The third possibility is that the vaccine seriously injures the immune system. It can even result in death.
Major Russ Dingle, former flight commander at A-10, instructor pilot at the Connecticut Air National Guard. And I was forced out of the Guard based on my refusal to take the anthrax vaccine. I could not ask any of my men to do something that I was not willing to do, and I was not willing to take the vaccine based on my belief that the order was illegal and immoral.
They won't change their mind and won't take the shot, then it leads to some kind of disciplinary action.
I was sentenced to 60 days in the brig, convicted on January 12th, 1 year exactly to the day I refused the shot.
It's the indignity of being a lab rat, of being thought so little of. You know, and the fact that I was lieutenant colonel and a board-certified internist and all this other business, I mean, aside from that, the fact that someone thought so little of me to experiment on me like that.
But our lawmakers in this country say that this is an experimental drug, and our soldiers are required to have informed consent, and you're not giving it to them.
I would find all the people who, all the way up the chain of command, who were responsible for giving me the shot that day, and all the other people, and I would bring them to task.
This is breaking the law. This is no different than doing anything else illegal.
Were they not vaccinated and exposed to this agent, they would die a horrible death.
It was fall in line, get with the program, start marching. And if anybody doesn't march, then it's like the Bataan Death March. You just drag them off to the side and shoot them. 32 years. Vietnam, Gulf War, Grenada, Panama, and all the little deals in between. The chain of command has violated the trust that the troops have for them.
So the commander called the people into the theater, and he said, I want to hear from you folks. And one by one, they stood up and told their story.
It came to my attention that some of our crew members were having serious adverse effects from the vaccination program.
About 15 minutes ago, I made the decision that no one at Dover Air Force Base will receive the anthrax.
That Wednesday morning, May 5th of 1999, I thought it was important to make that decision. I'm Felix Greeter, Air Force Colonel. I became the wing commander at Dover of the 436th Airlift Wing in 1997. I had 6,000 men and women under my command. I knew that my decision on that Wednesday morning, May 5th, 1999, was the right decision. All of my military training, starting from my days at the Air Force Academy as a cadet, up through flying training, up through the Navy Command and Staff College, in the Air War College, in the Air Force Core Values, told me that taking care of the people is most important, and the people will take care of the mission. In this case, I could see that some of my people were suffering. They needed support. They needed the loyalty from their commander, and it was my opportunity in that moment in time to give that to them. I was informed that Lieutenant General Rodman would come personally to Dover Air Force Base along with some additional medical officers to explain the anthrax vaccination program more fully.
For the kickoff of a war, I haven't seen that many stars show up. The Air Force sent this gigantic, rank-laden team to Dover.
Dr. Dana Bradshaw in preventive medicine, Dr. Friedlander from USAMRIID, Colonel Fred Gerber, Colonel Crowder, Harvey Crowder, Lieutenant Colonel Borowski from the Joint Program Office, Dr. Pittman from USAMRIID, Colonel Williams. Because there is the at least loose connection in people's mind with the alleged Persian Gulf illness.
It was every high roller in the anthrax vaccine program was there to talk to us because the active duty wing commander called a timeout.
It has been described as crude and dated medical technology.
We would possibly be vulnerable to an anthrax attack, and we had an obligation to protect our troops.
I believe that what you are seeing is a huge amount of concern to address this issue. The timeout that I called last Wednesday was to address concerns.
I'd like to have an answer why I have anti-squalene antibodies in my system. You know, there's medical research that's been around for 30 years that indicates this is unsafe. This is very harmful to people. It's an oil-based adjuvant. It's a big no-no to use on people. Why did the FDA find this in five anthrax vaccine lots?
So those being ordered to take the vaccine face a profoundly personal choice.
If there is no squalene in the anthrax, then I want to know. And I want to know not just from the military, but I want to know from the people that are saying that there's possibly squalene in it. And I want to know from credible sources like in Stockholm or National Institute of Health.
Due to poor record keeping, no large-scale research has been conducted.
And until I hear that, I don't feel confident in ever taking another shot.
Whether or not to put something in their bodies they fear may do more harm than good.
And if I have to get court-martialed to not take another shot, I will get court-martialed not to take another shot.
I know that squalene is, in fact, a red herring.
When General Rodman said that, it brought us a sense of relief.
I am not concerned about the safety of this medication.
After military service, the uniform comes off, but the anthrax vaccine stays with you for life.
Later in that briefing, I stood up in front of the air crew members and all those assembled in the briefing room to say that we at Dover were going to reinstate the vaccination program based on General Rodman and the staff's assurances that the vaccination program was safe and effective.
Vaccine. I believe him. I expect you to believe him. Officer in the Air Force and the United States Air Force Surgeon General. He is the most credible person on this subject today. And you see the United States Air Force and Army representatives here bending over backwards to address those concerns.
The next day, Colonel Felix Greeter was moved to the Pentagon and relieved of his command at Dover Air Force Base. After this briefing, 37 out of 42 pilots stationed at Dover Air Force Base left the military. The cost to train one of these elite pilots? About $7 million.
Looking back on what transpired and knowing that the first five lots delivered to Dover did contain that adjuvant squalene and contained it in a doubling of dosages from 10 to 20 to 40 to 80, help explain why indeed we had more adverse effects at Dover Air Force Base. If there was such a secret study being conducted, that those responsible for it must be held accountable. And it should never be allowed to happen again.
We have tried to do this to the best of our ability.
A lot of people received a lot of vaccines in a very short period of time.
We have a very safe and effective vaccine.
You were given your jabs and you just accepted it.
Total force anthrax vaccine immunization involved a deliberate and detailed process.
I had 9 inoculations in the space of 24 hours.
She passes away from an autoimmune disease, from a vaccine that she should have never had.
This was not a vaccine safe for pregnant women.
There are no vaccines, to my knowledge, that are recommended to be given to women who are pregnant. Anthrax is a safe vaccine, and it is efficacious. But you should realize that it is not a medical program.
The label states it is a medical procedure, even though the FDA approves it as a vaccine. Biothrax IM is unproven for the prevention of inhalation anthrax.
And that's when we knew that something was wrong. One study shows it's good is good, then two studies must mean it's better. And so now all of a sudden we have 13 studies since 1997.
Anthrax is a safe vaccine.
When the first 37 years or 30 years, only 3 studies had been done.
We are deeply committed at the Department of Defense to force health protection. We are deeply committed at the Department of Defense to force health protection.
The Army did all the research. The Army owns the patent. The Army paid for the licensing studies. The Army has been essentially the sole customer since it was licensed in 1970.
The sole production plant is under renovation to address serious failures to follow good manufacturing practices, which in turn can affect vaccine purity, potency, and safety.
Graft, payola, consulting fees, or kickbacks.
When a government pays private industry to manufacture goods that its military will buy back at retail, there is bound to be undue influence.
According to some estimates, we cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
The cost of this war has been compounded by its careless and incompetent execution. From the billions that have vanished in Iraq to the billions more in no-bid contracts for contractors like...
Fahd El-Hibri, now 56 years old, had German citizenship from his mother. His father, Ibrahim El-Hibri, a Lebanese businessman, lived in four countries to avoid income tax in any one. After graduate school at Stanford University, Fahd went to work in Saudi Arabia for Citibank. He returned to Citibank in New York in the mid-80s to start a mergers and acquisitions division. During the 1990s, when Margaret Thatcher was privatizing British assets, El-Hibri gained control of Porton Down's anthrax vaccine manufacturing facility. Emergent BioSolutions, formerly BioPort, maintains the only government contract for the anthrax vaccine. There were so many FDA inspection reports and citations that the U.S. government needed to spend tens of millions upon millions of dollars to revamp the manufacturing facility. The FDA ordered BioPort to cease manufacturing the anthrax vaccine because of 35 major citations. Somehow, the anthrax vaccine was still manufactured and sold during these years, despite the fact that the plant was under renovation and vaccine lots were in quarantine.
Why are we forced to take this drug if it's investigational, according to our lawmakers? The Government Accounting Office reports showed that the one and only manufacturer has never passed an FDA inspection. It received approval in 1970 to manufacture this product. And then for 23 years, the FDA never came back around again. I found out through our own government documents that the U.S. military hired another company called PRI in Maryland to produce the vaccine. This company was not licensed. This company did not publish what ingredients they put in the vaccine. But the company was paid $14 million to produce the vaccine, ship it to Michigan to be bottled and labeled and distributed as if BioPort made it. I showed these documents to the Pentagon. They looked over their glasses and said, "This couldn't have happened." I said, "I didn't make these documents, you did."
Ibrahim El-Hibri and his son Fahd financed privatizing the distribution arm of CAMR through I&F Holdings, their Dutch Antilles company, to create Porton International. The principal business was selling and distributing the anthrax vaccines. Admiral Crowe authorized the licenses to export the materials to produce weaponized anthrax bacteria to Saddam Hussein in the 1980s. He served as chairman of the Joint Chiefs under Presidents Ronald Reagan and George Bush Sr.
My first experience in press conference in the State Department.
In 1994, retired Admiral Crowe was the first senior officer to endorse Clinton's presidential run despite Bill's lack of military service experience. Clinton appointed Admiral Crowe the ambassador to the United Kingdom. While in England, Ambassador Crowe met Fahd El-Hibri.
I do some what I believe is important work for national security here in the United States.
In December of 1995, Republican Governor John Engler, with no input from the Asset Management Committee of the State of Michigan, signed an executive order removing the vaccine production unit to Michigan Biological Products Institute. This created a nonprofit entity paving the way for the commercial sale of a state asset. In 1996, Fahd El-Hibri contacted Robert Myers to discuss purchasing the lab. As a then-German citizen, Fahd El-Hibri was ineligible. In early 1998, SmithKline Beecham retracted a $50 million offer because of the adverse publicity about the anthrax vaccine.
Fahd El-Hibri made Admiral Crowe a partner to eliminate legal issues that would prevent his purchase of BioPort Labs, later renamed Emergent BioSolutions. BioPort was purchased for only $25 million, and all improvements were paid for by the American taxpayers.
For retired Admiral Crowe's assistance, he received 23% of Intervac LLC. This gave Crowe 12.5% of the newly formed BioPort, which Fahd controlled.
Myers and his assistants appraised the facility at 60% of its value and approved a low-down, interest-free loan for the buyer. In return for their generosity, they receive 32% of the former asset of the state of Michigan.
Fawood El-Hibri now has a monopoly on the free world supply of the anthrax vaccine. When the deal closed, the price per shot increased from $3 per shot to $10.64.
The Obama administration increased the anthrax vaccine allowance by adding hundreds of millions of dollars in 2012.
Ironically, the very first time I heard the word anthrax vaccine or heard about the initiation of the anthrax vaccine program, I was actually deployed over to Kuwait after 4 years at the Air Force Academy. I included about 7 years of flying F-16s, followed by a few years of flying the A-10, and then a couple more years of flying the F-117, and then I went back to the A-10 until the anthrax vaccine program ended my flying career.
Myself, I did not want to receive the vaccine, and I did not want to put the Air Force in a compromising position by having a physician come out against the vaccine. So I refused the Article 15. I went through the court-martial process and was found guilty, fined $21,000, and sentenced to 60 days on base.
They've told me that I don't have an anthrax problem. I don't want an anthrax problem, because if I have an anthrax problem, they'll send me to a board that can evaluate me and take away my wings.
The Pentagon is not publishing this information. You have to assume that there's something that they want to keep hidden.
You know, I'd rather have caught a bullet from an AK-47 than gotten injected with this stuff. At least I would have known what my fate would have been. You know, am I going to be alive 2 years from now? Or am I going to join the ranks of some of my buddies that are passing away? Or in wheelchairs? Or walking on crutches? Friendly fire. Friendly fire through a needle.
I don't think you can impress upon anybody with enough emotion or sincerity about how this can drastically alter your life.
My name is Ken Alibek. In the former Soviet Union, work in the field of research and developing biological weapons. Being a physician, of course, you realize it's not something you're supposed to do. You understand that this research is very essential to protect against the United States, because at that time I strongly believed it was the case that the United States was researching and developing biological weapons to attack the Soviet Union. There was nothing wrong with the work to develop biological weapons, because biological weapons, some people say they're more humane than other weapons. One of the first forms of anthrax developed was antibiotic-resistant anthrax. Anthrax, which would be very difficult to treat by a big number of antibiotics. Anthrax was considered incurable. And when something like this is incurable, especially inhalational anthrax, of course, it makes this pathogen a very, very attractive and very effective weapon.
Think how many people can be killed by just a tiny bit of anthrax.
From 1900 until 2001, there have been only 18 fatalities from inhalation anthrax.
Scott Miller, the director of this film, enlisted H. Ross Perot's help in putting USAMRIID's anthrax vaccine program on Karl Rove's problem agenda in 2001. Rove emailed Paul Wolfowitz, and after a Defense Department review in August 2001, they recommended that the Joint Chiefs consider canceling Bioport's anthrax vaccine program. The very next month, 9/11 happened.
We have here with us a man who should know whether or not it's working, Jerry Hauer, who's the former head of New York City Mayor's Office of Emergency Management.
Jerome Hauer told Peter Jennings that the Twin Tower attack was not the work of a foreign government. He mentioned Osama bin Laden's name.
I'm not sure I agree that this is necessarily state-sponsored. It, as I mentioned earlier, certainly has fingerprints of somebody like bin Laden.
He knew on the day of the attack that it was the work of Osama bin Laden, not a foreign government, and that there were no explosives in the building. All the damage was done by the planes.
It's hard to put it into words, and maybe one doesn't need to.
Jerome Hauer was also managing director of Kroll Associates, an international risk management firm serving clients in the U.S. government and the military, and also the national security advisor with the National Institute of Health. 7 days after the 9/11 attacks, five anthrax-dusted letters arrived by post, killing five people in New York and Florida. Jerome Hauer knew that there would be an anthrax attack. He advised certain members of the White House cabinet to start taking Cipro 1 week before the first anthrax letter arrived at the post office.
Anthrax reported at a Florida hospital.
One Florida man is in the hospital.
He's hospitalized with inhalation anthrax.
7 days after the 9/11 attacks, five anthrax-dusted letters arrived by post, killing five people in New York and Florida. Tens of thousands of Americans were given the antibiotic Cipro, and a massive FBI investigation was set in motion.
Anthrax here has now reached Capitol Hill.
Just talked to Leader Daschle. His office received a letter, and it had anthrax in it.
I arrived in Senator Daschle's office on Friday and was opened and handled by an intern this morning.
Emergent BioSolutions' disgraced anthrax vaccine program was given a new lease on life. Production went into high gear using experimental adjuvants to stretch the available doses of vaccines.
Dr. Bruce Ivins was an Army career scientist who worked exclusively with anthrax since 1979. During the 1990s, he authorized the addition of MF59 squalene into secret batches of vaccine to boost an immune response. The FDA directed Dr. Ivins to test every lot of APA vaccine created before the year 2000. All of them proved to be completely unreliable against anthrax, and many of the animals died. In July 2008, an increasingly despondent Dr. Ivins commits suicide.
He killed himself before we could get to him.
Where is the smoking gun? Where is the proof?
If Dr. Ivins wasn't the perpetrator, that person is still out there.
Ivins' guilt or innocence, and whether the spores came from Battelle in Utah or Fort Detrick in Maryland, isn't as important to the average American as the FBI's admission that this was an inside job. The real question is, how big is the inner circle from which that insider acted? The anthrax threat restarted the anthrax vaccine program with a vengeance. It saved Bayer, the maker of Cipro, from the brink of bankruptcy. It created the need for new security systems and surveillance, provided the alibi for a war on terror in Afghanistan and Iraq, and the list goes on until it gets to American civil liberties. Congress passed the Patriot Act because of the fear generated by 9/11 and the anthrax letter attacks. The go-to guy on the anthrax threat, Russian defector Colonel Ken Alabek, insisted that vaccines were ineffective against munitions-grade anthrax. Thirteen congressional hearings arrived at the same conclusion. The DOD was not capable of adequately monitoring the anthrax vaccine program. The government kept the overview of critical proceedings from our soldiers. In December 2008, Biothrax IM, intramuscular injection, receives final FDA approval for licensing. But the FDA still requires Emergent BioSolutions to state that Biothrax IM is unproven for the prevention of inhalation anthrax disease. Effective October 2008 until 2015, the mandatory anthrax vaccine program was reinstated as an emergency measure. Who is making these decisions? When cornered, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs, Dr. Winkenwerder, admitted that there was no evidence of an increased threat of anthrax to our troops.
We have a very safe history with vaccines, and we have a safe history with anthrax vaccine.
This boast appears on their website. Our principals led and managed the Defense Department, the largest and most complex enterprise in the world. Mr. El-Hibri must be referring to his team of lobbyists, led by the man who instigated the mandatory anthrax program in 1998, former Secretary of Defense William Cohen. The Cohen Group is helping develop international markets for emergent biosolutions anthrax vaccine. Bioport began a campaign urging lawmakers to initiate nationwide immunization of civilians.
The biggest interest is for Al-Qaeda and for some other terrorist groups. They already have biological weapons developed, acquired, and ready for use. And the issue is just to bring these biological agents and weapons into the United States. Anthrax, in my opinion, is still one of the biggest threats. At the same time, I cannot see that this vaccine is absolutely safe. There are no safe vaccines at all.
So if I could convince the commander that there's an issue, then they would fix it. And I believe that. I went to headquarters, talked to General Starbuck. He treated me very well. He treated me with respect. General Starbuck told me that he wished more officers had my kind of integrity. He wished more officers stood for what they believed, like I was doing. And then he thanked me for talking with him and wished me on my way. I knew the Air Force was a good place to be. And I felt like the weight of the world was lifted off my shoulders, that there was a commander out there that was a commander. He was going to take charge, and he wasn't going to let another officer take a hit over this poorly managed vaccine program. And it was about 10 days later I got my notice to leave the Air Force. And on my way out the door, I was fined.
Major Sonny Bates was the first commissioned officer to refuse the anthrax vaccine. Despite 14 years of service, he was stripped of his rank and benefits and fined $6,000. Soldiers get a series of 5 shots and an annual booster because the anthrax vaccine does not result in immunity. It can cause unsafe antibodies that their immune system must kill off. Expired doses of the vaccine are so carcinogenic that they are disposed of in furnaces hot enough to melt steel. Soil bacteria like anthrax are important to the cycle of life. They liquefy and dispose of dead animals. When soil bacteria gets into a snake's saliva glands, it ferments into venom. APA, an exotoxin just like snake venom, is the key ingredient in all anthrax vaccines. It is the slime that anthrax secretes to protect itself. It is very clever and can commandeer cell proteins for its own purposes. Squalene, a fat compound that synthesizes hormones, cholesterol, and vitamin D, was added to the anthrax vaccine to make tiny APA more visible. Unfortunately, together they appear to be a cell with cell proteins bound to it. APA is able to signal for furin to activate it. Think of furin as a scissor. It activates growth factors by cutting a critical protein that starts a chain reaction. Macrophage means big eater. Y-shaped memory B cells attach to the cell wall and catch antigens for the macrophage to eat. But anthrax protective antigen is smaller and able to outmaneuver the B cells. Squalene-aligned APA signals the enzyme-cleaving protein furin to cut off its top. 7 APAs form a normal cell pore landing pad capable of receiving signaling proteins. This Trojan horse is full of its own agents. APA sends in the anthrax edema factor first. It builds a cyclic AMP factory that converts fat to starch and then into sugar water. APA takes over the docking sites and gets to work to protect anthrax, not you. APA releases 2 anthrax lethal factor proteins. They trigger a normal but fatal demolition process. Once the cell wall collapses, the anthrax bacteria can feed and multiply. APA is made of the D-isomer of glutamic acid, instead of the L-form of amino acids found in proteins. And if passing T cells recognize that furin is involved in an illegal activity with an antigen, they will make antibodies to furin, because they can't make antibodies to APA. Furin activates nerve growth factor. Deprived of nerve growth factor, severe depression and schizophrenia can occur. Furin activates transforming growth factor beta-1. Without this, rheumatoid arthritis, tendonitis, tendon rupture, giant cell arteritis, and Takayama arteritis would result. Without furin to activate parathyroid hormone, the body would develop chronic fatigue syndrome. Furin activates beta secretase and gonadotropin. Without either hormone, glands like the prostate, scrotum, breast, and ovaries will malfunction, resulting in burning semen syndrome and cysts. Without furin to activate von Willebrand factor, chronic skin, hair, tear gland, saliva gland problems would develop. Furin activates effector T cells to produce tumor necrosis factor alpha-1, essential to the rapid response component of the immune system, which prevents metastatic cancers. Furin is required to activate suppressor T cells. Without suppressor T cells, anti-nuclear antibodies will not be controlled, leading to autoimmune diseases of healthy tissues. When the anthrax vaccine causes furin-sequestering antibodies, it can lead to all of the Gulf War syndrome diseases and Gulf War neurological illnesses, as well as birth defects. In the summer of 2012, the Obama administration allocated $1.2 billion for trials of the anthrax vaccine on 2-year-old children and the elderly. The fact was that antibiotics proved to be successful in treating weapons-grade inhalation anthrax. Inexpensive doxycycline is now the recommended drug of choice because of the side effects due to CPRO.
Indeed, all of us on this stage, every single one of us, have a profound responsibility to every soldier, sailor, airman, Marine, and Coast Guardsman who puts their life on the line for America.
Tonight, let us speak with one voice in reaffirming that our nation is united in support of our troops and their families.
We've succeeded in defending our nation, taking the fight to our enemies, reducing the number of Americans in harm's way, and we've restored America's global leadership.
The cover-up has got bigger than the original mistake.
They still do the ballroom dance, that they're still dancing on the subject, and there's still information coming in, and they still stick by their guns, and they still say that there's nothing wrong with this vaccine. They're criminals.
Freedom. It is the soldier, not the reporter, who has given us the freedom of the press.
We've got over 5,000 men from a force of 40,000 who are ill.
They kicked me out.
It is the soldier, not the poet, who has given us the freedom of speech.
We're going on 40-some-odd months now of non-stop, 24-7, screaming in my ears.
It is the soldier, not the campus organizer, who has given us the freedom to demonstrate.
It takes a few months to get before the effects of the anthrax vaccine really get going.
This is an experiment.
It is the soldier who serves beneath the flag.
I can't have Gulf War syndrome because I never actually went out to the Gulf.
There are no safe vaccines at all.
Whose coffin is draped by the flag.
For every one individual that comes forward, there are three individuals that will not.
Who salutes the flag.
My hands prevent me from operating.
My officers were right up there with God and Corps.
The inoculations I received are classified secret.
We had an inordinate amount of people who were sick.
Who allows a protester to burn the flag.
I have a real bad feeling on this.
It is the soldier, not the politician, who has given his blood.
I was no longer deployable because I would not take the vaccine.
His body.
All I know is I feel used and abused and left to rot in the streets.
His life. Freedom.
He was proud of being a Marine.
We are not the enemy.
The Secretary of Defense says this is a lawful order. The entire chain of command, the Joint Chiefs, say this is a lawful order.
They actually done this to us.
Yeah, we checked this out and we think it's a lawful order and we're not going to let it go to court.
Use us as guinea pigs.
and there isn't any reason for me to be ill.
Each man or woman would say, I was perfectly healthy, and I took the anthrax vaccine and immediately became ill.
The anthrax vaccine program ended my flying career.
It is the soldier who serves beneath the flag, who salutes the flag, whose coffin is draped by the flag, who allows the protester to burn the flag. It is the soldier, not the politician, who has given his blood, his body, his life, who has given us these freedoms.
A fundamental right, when you say fundamental, you mean constitutionally that if it is indeed fundamental, neither president nor Congress nor even courts can deny it because it is fundamental. And what is fundamental? The right to control your own body.
Secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord. You don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah. Hallelujah.
I just wanted to let you know that we have more important military forces than we want.
We are ready to light our first class passengers and uniformed military personnel to board.
Smoking fire, I didn't feel a thing. But suddenly I was rising higher, and I felt like I just made the biggest mistake. When I thought about my unborn child, when I thought about my
out here on the highway, everything's so slow. I thought I knew my way home, but now I just don't know. I'm going down the road and all them eastern winds are blowing. I'm going down the road and I don't care where it's going. So one more cup of coffee and the radio is on. I slip out your door to the breaking of dawn. I can't help but think about what I've done wrong to deserve this wrong.
Wow, what a powerful movie. My heart really goes out to those people who have been injured and in some cases died from the anthrax vaccine. These are really serious issues. People need to know about this. I hope that you're sharing the Vaccines Revealed event with everybody that you know. Tomorrow's episode is also unique and special, and I'll tell you why. We start out with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. And Sherry Tenpenny has been a powerful figure in the vaccine movement. She'll be talking about fraud, corruption, and her crusade with all of the issues that we've been talking about throughout Vaccines Revealed. Now, what makes tomorrow also a little bit special is I'm kind of going on the other side of the camera. Tomorrow, I will be interviewed by Dr. Tony Bark. So you get to see my own views in a more expressed and expansive way. I'd love to say that it's going to be a phenomenal interview, but I'll leave that up to you because I can't talk about myself, but I hope you do get a lot out of it. And tomorrow we also have an interview with a professor who is the mother of two autistic children who were vaccine damaged, Gail DeLong. I think by now you would agree with me that this information is very critical, and that anyone who tries to take any type of a stand on freedom of choice in vaccines, not wanting to vaccinate their children, not wanting to vaccinate themselves, that the result is an unprecedented ridicule. I think it's critical that people own this content. I think it's critical that you own this content. I would ask you to join with us, help support this mission, empower yourself with this content. We have two packages, a gold and a silver package. On this page, you can get deeper information about it. And I will tell you that owning this content is essential for anyone who wants to take a stand on this issue. Choose whatever package is right for you. Join this movement. Be empowered with this information. And let's together change things in this world, because the world desperately needs it.